Subprime lending is back. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Let's talk about that.
You are about to hear the opinions, suggestions, and observations of a licensed real estate broker in California. Since each situation can be unique, do not consider anything said here as legal advice for your specific needs. Always seek out the advice of a suitable professional in your area for advice tailored to your situation. Please remember that when following advice, your results may vary. Please also understand that the information provided here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the speaker considers important.
What do you seem to understand? I'm not locked in here with you.
That's it!
You're locked in here with me!
Hello, everyone. And welcome to another edition of Real Estate Realities with the Rebel Broker. My name's Robert Whitelaw, and I am the Rebel Broker. Licensed real estate broker in the state of California. Member of the National Association of Real Tours. But please, don't hold that against me. Here before you once again with just lots of stuff. Some of this is going to sound like some familiar stuff if you're a long-term listener, or familiar if you just managed to make your way through the huge real estate bubble and managed to come across even just a couple of articles of what folks thought caused the problem. That's right. I'm talking about subprime lending, folks. It's back. But is it the same subprime lending we knew in the olden days? Let's talk a little bit about what subprime lending was. It was going on for an awfully long time. It sort of goes all the way back to the Community Reinvestment Act from the early 70s, right? And it didn't really have any teeth, but it was one of those things that sort of spelled out in a regulatory way that banks needed to lend to underrepresented communities. And it said that they could the banks could be prevented from expanding through building new locations or acquiring existing banks. It said that it had teeth, but none of these things were ever actually done. Flash forward to the early 90s, and a bank, I think, in Boston actually gets penalized. They go to buy another branch from another bank or buy a bank or build a new branch, something along those lines, which requires federal approval. And the Fed says, nope. You are not lending enough to underrepresented communities. And we'll clarify that in what that actually means in a moment. You know, all of these things get – words that are supposed to push different buttons in our brains get used in a lot of these things. Because perhaps some of you are thinking, well, yeah, sure. I mean, an underrepresented community. Well, the community that they're talking about also happens to be credit challenged. So what they're basically saying is we need you to make unwise loans. We need you to ignore the credit history of people you're lending to based on their race. So it's kind of the flip side, I guess, of racism where you don't do something you do or don't do something based on color. All of that stuff kind of confuses me. None of that should have anything to do with it. The bottom line should be, you earn X, your expenses are Y, your history of paying stuff back is either good or it's not. So, you know, why the government introduces a different element, I've never quite gotten. I guess it's a feel-good thing. I don't know. But it sure does make sense to me to reward people for being good with their money, for living up to their commitments. Right? So the original subprime lending thing was yet another bit of bribery that the banking industry had to pay to the feds. So they just started doing it. And around 1995, they started going pretty strong with subprime lending, which basically means lending to people who are not prime borrowers. I don't care what color you are. I don't care where you come from. If you don't make enough money to cover the debt, you shouldn't get the loan. It's really that simple, particularly if you have very bad credit history, a history of not paying your bills, not making your payments. You're just a higher risk. But the federal government, through regulatory pressure, pushed banks into making these loans. Anyone who tries to tell you something different isn't paying attention. That's a huge chunk. You can argue about other little things that nibbled around the edges that caused problems. But at its core, I make the argument that if that policy had not been pushed by the government so that politicians could stand up and tout the percentage of home ownership among the population, because that's kind of what they wanted that photo op moment. If that hadn't happened, we would not have had the downturn that we did have. It may have still happened. It would have been dramatically more marginal. It wouldn't have been named, and people by now might not even remember it. Because the bottom line is it artificially created a ton of buyers who otherwise would not have been able to buy. So when you increase the number of buyers without a increase in the number of sellers, you create demand for houses, right? Instead of having one person for every house that's on the market, you now have 10 people on the market. And it all started in 95, but it really didn't start to catch on until 2000, when everything went hog wild and you could get 110% loans and stated income, where you basically just wrote down on a napkin, yes, I make monies, and then they'd loan you money based on that. So that was the subprime lending universe that got us into this mess in the first place. And on previous shows over the last few years, we've talked about this. We've talked about how the government kind of shifted its emphasis from sticking its fingers in the lending world and more into the renting world. It seems like it's decided to stick its fingers into everything instead of changing its focus. It's just broadened its gaze. And it's always shocking to see a government entity move back into – well, why is it shocking? I guess I'm shocked that I'm shocked. Whenever you see something that's patently a failure, you'd think there'd be a lesson learned there, right? But apparently not. So, I want to take a look at this and decide, is this the same thing? Are we really jumping down that same rabbit hole and potentially creating a whole bunch of people who will default on their loans? So we're going to take a look at that. There's some interesting data. There are some differences between the way subprime lending worked before and how subprime lending works now. This was going to be a far less sexy show because I know how sexy subprime lending is. We were going to talk about the Dodd-Frank bill and how kind of not good that has been for lending and banking. And it might come up. We might bring it up as a couple of things that contribute to overall bad stuff in the context of subprime lending. But that's not going to be the focus of today's show. There may be a separate show on it. I don't know. Dodd-Frank is basically very frustrating. So although the shows where I get frustrated tend to be the most popular, so maybe that's a great way to go. Before we jump right into it, though, I wanted to encourage everyone to subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you have subscribed to the show on iTunes, thank you very much. I do appreciate it. If you have not written a review, I would really appreciate you doing that. My goal here is to provide you value every single day. And the best way for you to reward me for that, aside from continuing to listen, is to write a quick review over at iTunes. I want to grow this show into something where I can focus more of my time on producing an awesome product that gives you something, A, to think about, B, to take action based on, or C, something that gives you some ideas on how to reach your goals, whatever they may be. And of course, I can hopefully provide a little bit more specific feedback on things relating to real estate. But again, I want to provide strategies. I want to provide ideas and paths that just generally push you forward towards whatever your goal is, whatever that might be. And if it's in real estate, fantastic. I can give you a greater level of specific detail when it comes to that. And hopefully over the course of the years of this show, we'll be able to explore all that stuff together and we can figure these things out. So I do appreciate you taking the time to do that. It's just an easy click and head on over. Some of you may have gone over to the rebelbroker.com over the last couple of days and wondered why it was just a white screen. No, I had not closed down the site. Horrible earth-ending web things happened, and that I finally recovered from that one today. So it is back online. I think it was only down for about 24 hours, but I've noticed a dramatic increase in the number of visits. Thank you very much. It's clearly from you folks at the Rebel Broker site. So perfect timing too. Just as soon as the traffic starts to really ramp up, the site goes down and is unrecoverable for almost a whole day. In other news, I'm still doing the BTR shuffle, getting my RSS feed liberated from Blog Talk Radio. I'm thinking about printing up t-shirts, free the Rebel Broker's RSS feed. I'm thinking, wow, that's another great way to potentially, you know, pay for getting the show done. Have a little merchandise. Free the Rebel Broker's RSS feed. What do you think? Too wordy? Well, we can come up with something better maybe. But in any event, I've been assured that somewhere around the 22nd that the issue will be taken care of. They are vague enough in their responses to not actually say they'll do it. And I'm not real sure how hard it is to put one line of text into my RSS feed. Not sure why it takes over a week to get someone to copy and paste that into my RSS feed. Just saying. They talk like I don't know what an RSS feed actually is. So it just frustrates the bejesus out of me. But we'll see how it goes. This is a very bizarre turn of events. I've also created an account on Reddit, so I am going to be bouncing around in the real estate section of Reddit if anyone's looking to post questions there. I need to generate enough karma to create a subreddit just for the show. Also created a Google Plus community page for the show. I want you to be able to communicate any way you can. I'm not sure I'm entirely enthusiastic about casting the net so wide into all different communities. It sounds like I may be creating more work for myself than I can track on a timely basis every day. But I want to give you folks the options that you feel most comfortable with. See which ones get traction and whichever ones take off and people like will keep going, and the other ones will just sort of gracefully shut down or roll into something else depending on what happens. So you can head on over to www.therebelbroker.com. To find the RSS feed, to also find a link to the iTunes page. And of course, if you do write a review, this is all based on the assumption that I am able to liberate my RSS feed from Blog Talk Radio. So part of me was a little hesitant to do the push today in today's show, asking for folks to go write a review. But I guess somewhere in my head, I'm at least confident that BTR will actually deliver on this. And if not, I'm absolutely confident that I will call them and scream at them for a long period of time until they do it. But we'll see how that works out too. I don't think there was any other housekeeping stuff. All right. So let's just jump right in. So we've kind of gone over what, in a really fast, short Reader's Digest version of what the subprime lending crisis was and what it put us, what kind of a position it put us in terms of how the markets were. But some interesting news came over the last couple of days where FHA is actually expanding what we would define as subprime lending. Now, they're not using the same words. They're using words like blueprint for access, right? It's like when Congress names a bill the babies and fluffy bunnies bill, and it's actually about, you know, killing babies and fluffy bunnies. Or, you know, they always want to give them these names that sound like how could it possibly be a bad thing, right? But it almost always is. Now, so this announcement from the Department of Housing and Urban Development, they're implementing a new supplemental performance metric, and they say that it will work right in hand with the agency's existing ratio or compare ratio and offer, quote, more nuanced insight into a lender's specific performance. So that, I mean, that kind of focuses on the lender side, right? But Ed Goulding, who apparently is a principal deputy assistant secretary for housing, says, quote, by better understanding FHA's acceptable risk tolerance levels for a variety of credit scores. Now, translate that into people who have bad ones, bad credit scores, lenders will have the confidence to lend more broadly. In other words, lend to credit score levels they would not normally lend. And FHA will have more data on how successful those lenders are. So it's a tracking thing. It's supposed to help FHA lenders see the impact of their business at all ends of the credit spectrum, i.e. the ones they don't lend at, which are the low ones, right? The riskier ones. It'll allow lenders to capitalize on the FHA's willingness to insure loans to eligible borrowers with lower credit scores. So that is subprime lending, right? So once you're five or six paragraphs into all the various stories out there in the world, there will be a single line where it states that it allows lenders to capitalize on FHA's willingness to insure loans to eligible borrowers with lower credit scores. So it's all part of this steady march back to just saying, well, gosh, you know, that whole crash thing, that was wacky. That was a crazy, totally something we couldn't have anticipated would happen, despite the fact people for years before it happened were anticipating what happened. But, you know, we don't want to talk too much about that. What we want to say is, you know, we need to get back into the business of lending people money who for in any other way would totally not qualify to borrow anything, right? Because they've proven they don't make enough, or they have too much debt, or historically they abandon their debts and just don't pay things. Those are the folks we want to lend money to, right? So let's try to siphon through this and try to get some takeaways here. Now, we do have a slightly different makeup of buyers right now. It really depends on what you think we should think of folks who walked away from mortgages or had a foreclosure or some other bad, did a short sale, whatever. What sort of effect should that have on people today, right? Millions of people who lost their homes in the recession are now ready to buy again, right? Boomerang buyers now have more loan options, and those are folks who are coming back to lending after they've had a credit problem. Rebuilding their credit is considered to be the most important aspect of moving forward. Now, and it's interesting the way that a lot of these folks phrase this. They tend to refer to it as folks who defaulted on mortgages as a result of a job loss or a personal disaster or otherwise would have paid responsibly. Those folks make up a really small part of what was the problem. So this is the general theme I'm reading in a lot of different articles that talk about a return to subprime lending or how we're sort of reopening that door. And I think it's based on the fallacy that those are the folks that make up the vast majority of people who ended up going into foreclosure or doing short sales. The bottom line is that for most of those folks, it was simply a situation where they suddenly owned a lot more on their house than it was worth. That was the lion's share. That was it. That was the precipitating event for a lot of these folks. So for a lot of them, it simply did not make sense. Now, were there job losses in there? Absolutely. I would absolutely agree that job loss played a huge part for a lot of folks. Not so much personal disasters or these other kinds of things. Now, they basically want to try and disconnect critical thought relating to short sales and foreclosures that happened before. And what's interesting is one common theme is this sentence that I'm reading over and over again in different articles. And that is, quote, "These defaults were the product of decisions made by homeowners in distress. They aren't representative of the homeowner's character." And I suppose to one degree or another, that is true. But your credit history is what your credit history is. If you go back and you look at the statistics, the folks who did the conventional loans that put down 20% on a house, a lot of those folks ended up just fine. In fact, the majority of those folks ended up fine. It's the folks who borrowed unwisely to begin with. And I know everyone wants to talk about predatory lending, and that is always a thing. There will always be some shyster trying to sell you a loan. Was it the statistically significant element in that whole problem? No, it was not. It was people who loved the idea of quote unquote getting something for nothing in terms of, well, I don't really make this amount of money, but I'm going to get a loan for that anyway. Or, wow, I'm going to get a loan where I walk away with a check at the close of escrow. You know, none of those things are smart things. Those are poor economic decisions. I mean, and I had clients who were on that boat, and I strongly suggested they not do that at the time. But no one saw a end to how much this stuff could grow. No one understood that what goes up eventually comes down. So I get that these are folks who were in distress, but they were in distress predominantly of their own making. Was it a situation where maybe they simply couldn't comprehend the fact that through regulation, a situation was being created that was artificially bloating prices? That this subprime lending thing was there's no way it could be sustained. It simply wasn't a sustainable thing. Yeah, I suppose. And you have to say shame on an awful lot of people for that. But the question now comes down to how much do we ask people to continue to own the fact that they did a foreclosure or a short sale? How long should someone be penalized for that? One thing that would be interesting to know would be what's the likelihood of a boomerang buyer? Now, let's remember what a boomerang buyer is, because a whole lot of people's expectations for the future of the market seem to boil down to boomerang buyers. The National Association of Realtors talks about them all the time. Different – California Association, pro-real estate outlets are all – well, hey, here come the boomerang buyers. They've been saying it for a year and a half. Right. But supposedly this is really the year, right, when folks will have had enough distance between their foreclosure or their short sale to where they can jump right back in and borrow again. So here's the number I want to know. Are boomerang buyers, are folks who have a foreclosure or a short sale in their credit history, are they more or less likely to do it again? Now, I've Googled this all different kinds of ways, and I can't actually get that number. But what's interesting is when you do Google that, all the articles that you do get about how wonderful it is that all these boomerang buyers are coming back. I'll tell you what, if we use an example of anything else, if we use an example of any other bad thing, in just about every instance I can think of, once someone has done something once and gotten through it, they are more willing to do it again and see it as a reasonable alternative. Now, I don't know how fair that is. I have absolutely no stats to back that up. But in just about every area, you build a comfort level with that. You're all, well, hey, it worked last time and got us out of this. And look, nothing happened. I didn't catch on fire. I may have had a tight credit situation for a while. But there was no huge, gigantic personal penalty. I mean, I lost my house and I had to move, and that was terrible. But I saved thousands of dollars. X amount of dollars were forgiven. Just poof, just gone. How many people saw that as a really good trade when it was all said and done? That's what worries me. And I'm not even really sure that this dynamic of the boomerang buyer is a real thing. But if it is, how reliable of a thing is it? And do we want to provide subprime lending to these same folks again who already went down that path of having a problem? And if we do, do we do it the exact same way, or do we have some other kind of standards that we put into place? And that's kind of the next topic here. So we already talked about their blueprint for access coming from the FHA, which fundamentally I think is a relatively poor idea, but maybe that's just me. Next would be subprime lending is back. It's alive. It's been around for a long time. 3/5 of people, 8.4 million, who lost their homes in the past 7 years ended up renting. Right? So that these are our rebound people. These are the folks who lost their homes during this bad period of time, and these are the number of folks that they think are going to be jumping back in. I actually had one here. A total of 9.3 million Americans went through a foreclosure or short sale between 2006 and 2014. All right? So that's the numbers. It's a huge number, and so many real estate-focused folks are just chomping at the bit for these folks to jump out and want to buy. Now, never mind the fact that there aren't enough properties out there for them, right? We're already having trouble with inventory. There is no inventory out there. Let's pretend for a brief moment that they do. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? All it will do will drive up prices in exactly the same artificial way it did before. It will create by totally ignoring past poor credit performance, by ignoring important credit-related data, these folks will be in a position to borrow again, which means them and everybody in that community who was in the same boat before will be a buyer again, bidding up values, bidding up home sales prices. Is that the solution to the problem? Now, with the gradual but surely rebounding real estate market, some private equity firms are now willing to take higher risk for greater yields to accommodate this discounted market. What are the key words in that sentence? Private equity firms. So this isn't FHA. And I'm actually A-okay. If it doesn't involve my tax dollars or your tax dollars, go for it. Some are approving borrowers in as little as weeks after a foreclosure, which is kind of scary. But a higher down payment is required with an expected above market interest rate. And that makes total sense. If you're someone who's willing to take the risk and loan to a subprime lender, it makes absolute mathematical investment sense to say, all right, well, I'll go ahead and loan you this money. But you need to put down a bigger down payment and you're going to have to pay X percent above the prime lending rate because you are not a prime borrower. Makes total sense to me. What scares me, and I think this is absolutely going to happen, FHA will step in and do this, and suddenly you will have people who A, have done this before, who have done the because these folks who put down more money and are putting more skin in the game, so to speak, excuse me, are going to be far less likely to do that short sale foreclosure thing again. Because I don't think we're going to see as much – at this point, I don't think we see as much of a drop in property values to offset the excessive skin in the game that they're asking in this case. Excuse me. I'm guessing we're talking 20% plus. In these cases, they don't give any details on this, but that's what it sounds like. A normal conventional loan would be 20% down, so I'm assuming they're asking for more. The guidelines are looser and fall outside of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's qualified mortgage rule. Loans are kept by these firms for securitization. So what does that mean? What's the translation into English? That means these are not qualified mortgages, meaning these guys don't get to sell them in the secondary market to Fannie and Freddie or underwrite FHA. So they have to hold on to them. This is exactly right. If you're going to do subprime lending, this is how it's supposed to work. This is how subprime lending worked before 1995. Yes, subprime lending existed. Subprime lending has always existed, but it had penalties. If your credit stunk, it cost you more to get that loan, right? Because you were a greater risk. And it was strictly a mathematical equation for the lenders to decide, yeah, okay, we accept the explanations that this person has given to us why they have a dodgy credit history. But we're going to need an increased interest rate and we're going to need more skin in the game. So we're going to need them to put down 25% to make sure we've got a buffer. Totally makes sense. Right now, boomerang buyers, again, these are the folks who did go through a foreclosure or a short sale or some other problem during the downturn. Now, are unaware of the waiting periods for a new loan secured by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, and VA following a mortgage default or bankruptcy. They suspected that they don't qualify for a mortgage. Fannie and Freddie waiting periods are similar for a short sale deed in lieu or bankruptcy. It's 4 years, while foreclosures are 7 years. And that's one reason why everyone's all very excited because they're doing this 4 year, 7 year math and just assuming all these people want to jump right in. Because you know what? Just like I'm saying, there may be folks who are more comfortable with it. There may be folks where that is the single most painful experience that they've gone through in their lives. There's a certain percentage of folks who went through that who absolutely took pride in their credit rating. They took pride in the fact that their word was good, and they absolutely had no other choice but to do that. And it is something that still gives them nightmares. Do those folks exist? I absolutely am convinced that they do. Do they make up the majority? Probably not. Just because out in the population, those kinds of folks aren't in the majority in a lot of different ways. the idea of coming back and having, and again, I'm A-okay with the private lending part of this, not A-okay with the potential government jumping in to do this in our name. Let's see. Was there anything else sexy here in that one? No, there was not. In some other interesting news, the Wall Street Journal did an article where they called it a comeback for risky home buyers. Lenders seek out borrowers who recently went through a foreclosure or bankruptcy. Excuse me. And this basically covers the same information we were just talking about, but it gives a little bit more insight into some dollars. Several lenders have entered into this market since the housing crisis, and their numbers, while still small, have picked up over the past year. Sakala, which is a guy from Inside Mortgage Finance, a trade publication, estimates that mortgage originations for borrowers who have recently been through a major financial setback and are back on their feet will total at least $5 billion this year. So basically, a lot of these folks are banking on the idea that this foreclosure was an anomaly. And if it is, if looking in this person's credit history and they have a relatively long one, right? I think it would hurt someone more if they were younger, if it was their first real foray into primary credit and then that happened because their credit history isn't as good. But if their credit history was great before and their credit history was great after and it was really this isolated thing, I think it's reasonable for lenders to come out and aggressively market to these folks. Excuse me, in the hopes of that having been a one-time anomaly for these people. Now, that $5 billion a year is up from about $2 billion to $3 billion last year, and it's expected to be the highest since the housing boom. That compares to a total of $1.3 trillion of mortgage originations that are expected for 2015, and that's also according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. So the truth is, and if you're someone listening to this show who went through one of these, you're obviously someone who's interested in getting more information about real estate, getting more information about your options and opportunities. And you should start shopping, and you shouldn't limit yourself to just government programs. They go through here and say that it'll all be – all the rest of it will be very mainstream. Applicants' income – they'll review applicants' income to ensure that they have the means to take on the mortgage. Require down payments that are often north of 25%. So yes, I did find a place where we could find out what those numbers are. They also check credit reports to make sure these borrowers are paying their bills on time and for evidence that their previous credit blemishes were due to a one-time event such as a job loss or other hardship. Excuse me. Now, lenders can also charge borrowers higher interest rates, often ranging from 5 to 10%. Now, before you clutch the pearls, that's absolutely a reasonable interest rate. Anything between 10 would be a little bit nuts. Maybe you're a greater risk for some reason. But, you know, I flash back to my very first subprime borrower, and that would have been like 1991 or 1992. And that person did it in the same way through a private lender, not through any government program. And it was very similar to this. And this is back when interest rates were just under 10%, like 8 point something, I think, by this point, maybe even 7 point something, right around 8. And I think they ended up paying 13% for their loan, which was considered actually pretty good considering their credit history. But what do you think? Does it make sense? Should, when someone is getting a loan, should the terms of that loan more accurately and realistically reflect the credit history of that person? The government said no. The government said, you know what? We should give these people top-tier lending standards – excuse me, lending conditions, terms and conditions, despite the fact they're not top-tier borrowers. And, you know, when we say top-tier borrowers, I don't want you thinking Mr. Gottrocks, the neighborhood billionaire who doesn't need the money. Top-tier borrowers are simply folks who pay their bills on time. That's it. They're folks who live within their means month in and month out. Maybe they only make 30 grand a year or 20 grand a year, but they are responsible in how they take on their debt. They don't take on debt they cannot pay. That kind of person will always be able to find a loan. When you are a responsible person with a proven track record of paying off your debt, whatever it may be, bankers will compete for your business. You've proven you are a good risk because you take your debt seriously. You take your commitments seriously. That's really what this all comes down to. So I actually think it's great that there are private companies stepping up to fill this need. And one reason why I feel it's so great is because for decades, we've had the government tell us, oh, well, only the government can do this, right? Nobody will do this. Franks was one of the senators who's no longer in the Senate, thank God, who was always touted saying, oh, you know, if the government doesn't do it, no one's going to do this. There'll be people left out in the cold. No, there won't. There will always be private sector folks, if the government gets out of the way, that'll provide this stuff. And this is just another example of it. And I think it's completely reasonable that there should be a higher cost associated with this. So what does this mean? What's the take home for you? Excuse me. What is in my throat? If you're a buyer and you are someone who was in a position where this was happening, broaden your search for your potential lender. Don't stick just with the government options because you think those are the only folks who will loan you money. There are absolutely private lenders out there who will get in your corner and will provide you a loan that you need to achieve your goals. So look for them and follow the advice I've given before. Always check with at least 4 or 5 different kinds of lenders before you make your decision. You're buying a product, right? You don't buy the first car you see at the first dealership you go to. You shop around and you see where you can get the best deal, right? Exact same thing with loans. For sellers, I think this just means that potentially you're going to have more folks out there who can potentially buy your house as if you needed that. You've probably already got plenty. But since we are seeing a time when things are slowing down a little bit, this may nudge it up. A whole lot of this is going to depend on whether or not we see these boomerang buyers. You know, I'm seeing, and as a percentage of the folks I'm talking to, folks who had a foreclosure or a short sale during the downturn, I've got one out of about 8 people I'm currently working with. So I don't, you know, that's not a predominant chunk, and I don't know what my peers are seeing, but I'm definitely not seeing any huge jump to that. So from a truth on the ground standpoint, doesn't seem to be coming as a lot of industry folks would love it to happen. All right. That's about it. I hope this has been helpful. I know I didn't come away with a lot of do this and do that or suggestions on what actions you should take based on this information. But I think it's always important to remember the things that have been bad. And when we start nudging or leaning towards bad things again, to get more information to figure out how bad it is. And right now, the federal government hasn't jumped in feet first to subprime lending again. Private industry is absolutely stepping up. But with that first article we saw today where the FHA is doing these things, it absolutely indicates they're moving back in that direction. And if anything I'm hearing from some lender folks it carries any weight, and it probably should, they're absolutely saying that FHA is bolstering up the subprime lending market and participating. So cross your fingers and hope this doesn't screw us over. It sounds so much like just before things went bad that it's stunning. But anyway, so feel free to come on over to therebelbroker.com and check out the show, participate, write a review on iTunes, and also reach out to me and give me any success or failure stories that all of us can learn from. That's how this is going to pay off for everyone, is if we can share stories that we can all grow off of and help pave the way towards whatever our goals are. Thanks again for listening, everybody. I'll talk to y'all tomorrow.